searching for Canada's best startups. The Pitch Please Podcast. Hosted by Mike Thibodeau. Give us your best pitch.
Pitch Please.
3, 2, 1.
Connecting with Canada's startups to learn about their business and the amazing people behind them. Follow along and hear some of the most interesting ideas and startups from across Canada.
What's up, everybody? It's Mike. We're back here on the Pitch Please podcast. And today I've got Caddo. We're going to be talking about their number one banking platform for businesses. So if you are a small business, if you are a startup, if you are a business here in Canada trying to bank not only in Canada, but do business globally, they might be the product for you. Welcome to the show, Caddo. We are going to be talking about Loop. Give us a quick introduction about yourself, and then let's get talking.
Sure. So I am the founder and CEO of Loop. We are a business banking platform. What we do is we help companies that are based in Canada who have the need to access banking services, both in Canada as well as internationally, do that all through a single and unified platform. So many companies today operate online, they operate digitally, they have customers, suppliers all over the world, and you can manage them a lot more seamlessly and cost effectively through Loop.
Cool. Well, I want to learn a lot about Loop, but I also want to learn a lot about you and even maybe what inspired the journey of Loop. So take us way back and tell us a little bit about yourself. A little bit about where, you know, your career journey got started, and maybe this is in the cards right from the get-go.
For sure. I actually grew up in England, so I'm originally from London. My parents were both small business owners, so I think you could probably say I've been connected to entrepreneurship for my entire life. I, you know, grew up working in both of my family businesses. My mom ran a catering business. I used to kind of do everything from cleaning the floors, working in the kitchen, serving food, delivering packages, you name it. So I've been very connected to kind of running a business for pretty much my entire life. And that was kind of part of the reason for sure that ultimately I ended up starting my own business to support other companies. You know, I see, you know, how so growing up, how hard it is to build a business, you know, what comes with being an entrepreneur. And that applies to businesses, both small, medium, and large. And I wanted to create a platform that enabled companies, founders, people who work at businesses to do their business, manage their business much more effectively than current financial providers. I'd say kind of one thing that I noticed in my parents' journeys is that typically financial institutions and financial providers are almost like a headwind versus a tailwind. They're something that you need to tackle. They should really be something that guides you, enables you as a business owner. And that is really what we're setting out to do with Loop, is building a financial services offering that actually supports companies.
Cool. Well, I want to learn a lot about that and what makes you different than traditional banks or platforms that people would consider and where you fit into all that. But it's really interesting that, you know, you were talking about your family being entrepreneurs and small businesses and your exposure to that. Was it at that time that, you know, you knew you would be a founder? Because I think there's like entrepreneurship and then there's becoming a founder. At that time, were you like, hey, I look up to my parents and I really also think that I might become a small business owner one day? Or were you like, hey, I also am the type of person that wants to go solve a big problem and become a founder of a startup? Because those are very different types of business journeys, right? And so what did things look like for you at that time?
A very reasonable question. You know, I knew I was an entrepreneur, I'd probably say, because I'd been studying little side hustles and businesses for as long as I can remember, right? Like I was literally running businesses out of my elementary school locker. So, you know, I've been doing stuff for pretty much as long as I can remember in life as a mechanism to build businesses and create things. I think there's a lot of creativity involved in entrepreneurship too. I'd say it wasn't until later that I realized that that ambition was maybe bigger than, you know, just building little ventures or little side hustles, but I actually wanted to kind of go and create a meaningful enterprise. I think a lot of that ties to what you feel your purpose is in life. And to me, there's a deep connection between my upbringing. I felt potentially what my skill sets were and where I can create value and help other people. And I felt like building Loop and building this business was a great way to connect all of those dots together. And that's kind of what brought me to ultimately founding this business, which, as you say, is not just kind of a regular small business. We definitely have a very large ambition in what we're building.
Now, did you stumble upon the idea or get impacted by the idea of Loop while you were sort of working with your parents, or did you, were you working somewhere else when this idea came to fruition?
I would say subconsciously. So I'll unpack that a bit.
Okay.
What I would say I noticed was, this was kind of maybe in my teenage years or a little bit later in life, financial service providers being a hindrance versus, like I said earlier, a tailwind. And that, the light bulb didn't go off at that moment. I wasn't like, okay, this is the problem to be solved. But later on, I started to kind of develop more of an interest in finance and economics and think about kind of banking, how money works, you know, how money flows, how our economy works, and started to realize that there's a lot of bureaucracy and inefficiency in the economy, specifically tied up in financial services. That was kind of, I'd say, a personal hypothesis that I developed in life, of maybe in my university years. And for that, I kind of started to connect the dots backwards to, oh, maybe this is also why my parents struggled with this. So I would say it was for sure inspired by that. I would be lying if I said I was a child who said I wanted to go and build a bank when I was older. But reflecting back on their journeys and maybe some of the things that were more challenging for them, that for sure was part of my realization as to, you know, this is broken. And, you know, I've even personally experienced this, or personally experienced it through my parents' lives and their journey. So that kind of, I'd say, just doubled down on my enthusiasm for wanting to solve this problem in this problem set in particular.
Got it. Can you unpack that headwinds versus tailwinds a little bit for me? Like, what are some of those challenges that made banking or current financial solutions feel like a headwind for you or your family or potentially other SMBs?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, it usually starts with the basic premise of there are a number of points of friction in building a business. For example, like, just to use one of the most kind of common ones, you know, working capital is a very big point of friction for businesses. And technically, like, that's why banks exist. They were created to solve working capital issues, as in, you are going to get paid later, but you have expenses today, and how do you bridge that gap? And that you know, that's a very general statement, but that's fundamentally like why banks were created in the first place. But nowadays, banks have completely lost their way from that being the intention of what they do, and they basically make money by nickeling and diming you on fees. They provide very poor customer service. They make it really hard to do anything. And there's lots of reasons for that. I won't go into kind of every single underlying reason that's come to be the case. But as a result of all of that, you know, instead of them being a unlock for a business, they actually end up being a point of friction for a business. And so how that manifests is in many different ways, but I'll give you some examples with Loop. You know, I when I kind of was in the journey of starting to build out Loop's product, would speak to lots of business owners, and I'd just ask kind of, what were your main problems in business? I wouldn't even say with respect to banking. What are some of the things that like annoy you or frustrate you and you know, keep you up at night? And a lot of things would actually be caused by their financial providers. It would be like, you know, I'm waiting to get paid from somebody in the US, and there's no easy way for me to get a payment. I'm chasing my customer to send me a wire, and I have this other payment that has to go out for my business. There's no easy way for this to be facilitated. Or I have to go into my bank branch literally to initiate this payment in the middle of a pandemic. They're telling me the only way to do this is to like physically walk into a bank branch, right? So all of these different kind of issues or pain points that people have circle back to banks not being oriented around customer service, around serving the people that they're meant to serve, which are ultimately small businesses. There's a number of different ways in which that manifests. And, you know, Loop isn't going to solve all of them, but we definitely want to solve as many of them as we possibly can.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that then. So I'm super curious where the name came from. Tell us a little bit about how you came up with the name.
Yeah, maybe there. That's a good like short interlude into our pivot story. So we actually were originally called Lending Loop. That was the original idea behind the business. And the reason it was called Lending Loop is it was originally focused on lending. And the idea for the business was you would lend, you would get the money back. You'd lend to a business, get the money back, and then you would take that and invest that in more companies, thus creating kind of this virtuous loop where you would, you know, earn interest and then you know, reinvest that interest in more businesses, and that's helped growing the economy. Well, that is a little bit now different in terms of what we actually do in our mission. The same idea around it being a loop very much applied, which is like, we want to create this kind of virtuous loop in the way that we work with companies. We want to enable businesses, help them grow, and in turn, build products and software that helps other companies be successful. So I'd say it's around, you know, you obviously often hear the kind of context of a story of a growth loop or term being referred to as a growth loop. So it kind of ties into that mentality or philosophy.
Got it. So it actually even originated from that before that pivot, the first approach and the iteration to how you're helping SMBs. Tell me about that pivot. What informed that? What guided that? Was it to go after new opportunity, or was the original idea, you know, maybe challenged as you started going through the business model?
Several factors, but to kind of break it down into kind of the most relevant points, we realized that in order to be a true financial partner for companies, you have to be more than just a loan provider. I think a lot of like companies that just provide loans or capital definitely do a good service. But the customer relationship almost starts and ends with just being kind of that type of a product. And I think we wanted to really be much more deeply embedded into our customers and help them through our relationship in more ways than just access the capital. And that's also a way where we felt like our team is very, you know, very much a kind of software and technology focused team. Trying to build things that are on the leading or cutting edge of new technologies. And so lending is an area that maybe there's certain limitations on innovation. Like there's only so much you can incrementally do to make loan technologies better or make lending better, which, you know, I would say we did a little bit of, but ultimately to really embed ourselves into a customer's life and help a business be successful, it's more than just about capital. It's about, you know, how they actually manage their money, their business. You know, working capital is not just solved by loans. Sometimes it's about making your payments more efficient, making it easier to collect money from customers, etc. And so it was about being more than just, you know, a singular point of contact with a business and being a lot more than that. And that's where we went from being Lending Loop into being Loop.
I love the pivot. How did you know when the right time was to make that pivot? When did you feel like we're hitting a wall or the opportunity is just not there? Because I think that's hard for some founders, right? You get pretty attached to your initial idea. You're either completely hacking through the MVP and making pivots along the way, or you're down a path, which it sounds like you were down a little bit and you made a pivot. Was there like some guiding principles that you used, or maybe now looking back on it, that you would use to understand when you need to?
Yeah, I mean, like, look, I think the first thing that we started to think about was like kind of unit economics of the business. So yeah, we were very much metrics driven in our approach to like looking at the health of the company. And we were looking at, you know, customer unit economics, what did it take to acquire a customer, how much would you make off that customer. And in what we basically realized is that like lending is more of a transaction by transaction based business. And so to get really great unit economics, it wasn't going to work through just transactional services. You had to somehow introduce software into it. So that was basically the, you know, formula, so to speak, that we came up with for, okay, this is a problem, you know, it needs to be solved by some other solution than just kind of doing, you know, trying to hit the same nail with the same hammer, right? We've got to kind of figure out a new way to solve for this particular issue. So that was something that we kind of decided. However, that was right before the pandemic. Then the pandemic happened. And I think for many people, and we were no exception to this, it had impacts on our existing business. It had impacts on our customers. It was somewhat of an existential moment. And so I would say what it did was really accelerate that pivot. Like what our original plan was to kind of get there through almost like turning a ship, you know, 45 and then 90 degrees. But because of the pandemic, what we basically decided to do was kind of more of a heavier rip and replace type of solution where we went kind of 90 degrees all at once and really kind of changed course. And I think that was basically down to timing. I still believe that we would have kind of ended up in a similar place to where we are now, but just done it through a slightly different strategy. And I think there's never a true answer on which is better between one or two strategies. But the reason that we did that kind of more heavy reset on direction, I would say was very much influenced by timing.
Okay, interesting. But I pulled out the bit around unit economics there, and it sounds like that's, you know, a piece to probably think about or consider or review more regularly or earlier on. Not that you weren't doing that, but it was a guiding point to maybe what informed your pivot in a, at a time when a lot of times if you don't make the pivot early enough and you don't find that out, that's why businesses fail, right? And so you caught it early. You looked ahead and said, we're not just going to push through and say, oh, okay, great. We're going to have a bunch of email addresses that I'll eventually convert. But you're like, the turnover of this is too transactional and we can't create sustainable connection and revenue from our customers. And so we need to pivot, which is really interesting. So let's talk about like what Loop does then from a differentiator in the market. What types of things are covered? Because I think you said, hey, we started with lending, but we've now since expanded what that offering looks like. Talk to us about what the breadth of that offering is. And then let's learn a little bit about how Loop's different than your traditional bank or other.
What we realized in this journey of kind of conducting that pivot, so to speak, was there are a huge amount of pain points and friction that companies deal with. And specifically, the people who feel that pain most acutely are businesses who transact across multiple countries. There are huge amounts of hidden fees, costs, long timelines associated with operating a business in multiple jurisdictions. So just to give you a couple examples of that, let's say you're a Canadian company and you sell in the US and the UK and you have customers in those markets. There is no easy way to get a account number and a routing number in the US or an account number and a sort code in the UK, which is their version of our local bank account and account and transit number here in Canada. As simple as that sounds, it creates a huge amount of challenges for a business that's trying to expand into a new market. Like I would talk to people that would say, hey, I'm actually trying to grow my business and get into this new territory, but I can't figure out a way to seamlessly get paid by customers. So they end up with a solution that's kind of a piecemeal solution. Like maybe they use a card payment processor like a Stripe, or maybe they have to go to the bank and initiate cross-border international wires. Those solutions can cost 2-5% of your revenue. So they like can really cost you big time just to be able to own that money in another country. The same goes for spending money in other markets. Like the average credit card charges a 5.7% foreign exchange fee. So that means if you spend every $100 you spend, you're spending almost $6 in just bank fees using your credit card in another country. So there are all of these crazy things and all these crazy stats that exist around managing your money across different countries. And we would hear these pain points from founders and business owners who are building companies and like saying, I have like all of these points of friction in building my business, like, and nobody is there solving for these challenges. So what Loop did is basically like we took a step back. We said, like, why does this exist? Well, basically it exists because the concept of banks is domestic. Like banks exist currently in the form of Canadian banks, American banks, British banks, European banks, right? Mexican banks. There's no concept of like the global bank. But today's version of a business is global. Like if you're starting a business today, the chances are you are probably building a global business. You likely have either customers somewhere else in the world, or you at least have suppliers or parts of your supply chain that are international. So what we are building with Loop is a platform whereby you can manage your money incoming or outgoing in any country that you're doing business in. So if you're earning money from customers in the US, sending payments to suppliers in Europe, you can do that completely seamlessly at a fraction of the cost that it would take with a traditional bank. And the reason is we are building an infrastructure using software to make it easier to manage your money in a single and centralized place. So you don't have to do things through like going into bank branches, dealing with legacy wires, having to, you know, go through like very archaic processes to get either your billing or your payments. You can do it very seamlessly through a very modern technology platform in one place.
That's interesting. So is this, does this technically fit in? Because you can take payment by credit card, obviously, and you talked about some like Stripe and other transaction platforms that would make sense for that. Do you see this as like, hey, for any type of transaction, you would use Loop instead of a Stripe? Or is this sort of like, hey, when you want to accept and transfer money that's not by credit card, so maybe there's sums of money that start to break into the next tier where it doesn't make sense to use a credit card to receive payment or give out payment, or maybe an e-transfer, right? To your point, e-transfers work locally, but the second you go cross-border, you can't Venmo someone. Everyone in the U.S. uses Venmo. No one in Canada knows what the heck that is. So is there a threshold to where Loop fits in, or is it right from the first dollar?
What I would say is business owners shouldn't have to figure all this stuff out, being like, should I use Stripe? Should I use Venmo? Should I do e-transfer? What if I'm trying to e-transfer someone in the U.S.? Like, basically, we're a software platform that allows you to do all of those different things in a single centralized place. I'll just give you one example. Let's say you sell on Amazon.com, right? Like, you're a Canadian business and you're selling products on Amazon. If you go right now as a Canadian business to sell on Amazon, there's no way to easily get that US dollar revenue back to your bank account, your US dollar bank account in Canada. So you either have to use like a PayPal or some of, or like a, your other payment processor out there. That payment processor will usually charge about 3-5% in fees on every transaction that you do. So what Loop does is we give you a local account number in the US. So you get an account number and a routing number. So you earn money on Amazon, it goes into your Loop USD account. There's zero fees associated with that transaction. So you literally earn $100, you make $100 in your bank account. If you then want to transfer that money somewhere else, you want to pay somebody in the US, you want to pay someone in Canada, the UK, there's no like fuss of then figuring out which service you want to use. Like, do I use Venmo? Do I use PayPal? You literally just type their information in and Loop facilitates the payment out to that person. So everything when it comes to incoming funds or outgoing funds, we can handle. If you like using Stripe, for example, I would say we don't directly compete with a Stripe, because you can absolutely still use Stripe. You can use Amazon. You can use Shopify. All of those platforms I would not describe as banking platforms. They're in the business of payment processing. So you can use whatever payment processor you want and then integrate that with Loop. So you can then kind of receive your payments from that payment processor directly into Loop's platform.
Got it. And so what's your sweet spot? So it sounds like businesses and primarily Canadian businesses, especially those who are looking to have engagements with customers that are more international in scope rather than just within the four walls of Canada. Is that right? But then also, I'd love to understand more about this bit where, is it for businesses that integrate and deal with businesses, or for consumers as well? Because you said, yes, we integrate with your payment processor, but I'm just trying to understand like the dynamic of who's the perfect fit, startups, small businesses, that type of thing.
Yeah, for sure. So we can work with only businesses. So we don't work with any consumers, just as a starting point. And that's like kind of philosophically, you know, we want to help companies, and the services that you need as a consumer usually look quite different, specifically in the financial space, than businesses. So for that reason, we said like, let's be very disciplined and focus on SMBs and businesses. In terms of like our sweet spot of customer, it's, you mentioned like people who have customers internationally, but it's also anyone who has suppliers internationally. So like, let's just say like you might even have just Canadian customers, but you might be buying products in China and you might need a cheaper way to buy products there. Or you might have a credit card and you're trying to spend money in US dollars and you don't want to get hosed on foreign exchange fees. We have a really unique credit card product called a multi-currency credit card, where you can spend and repay balances in different currencies. So unlike every other credit card where it converts your money for you, ours does not. You actually get a balance that shows you how much you spent in each currency that you're spending money in. So basically, I mean, answering the question, it's very applicable for a lot of different use cases. I would almost put it down to, okay, who is it not useful for? It's not useful for people who have all of your revenue and all of your expenses just in the same country and currency. So if everything is in Canada, your revenue is only in Canadian dollars, and your expenses are all in Canadian dollars, you don't buy anything outside of Canada, then our product is probably not a great fit for you. If you don't meet that definition, then it probably is a good fit for you as a business. And one other thing I'll kind of mention on, you know, who do we work with, wide variety, because what I just mentioned applies to a lot of different types of businesses. We've seen like a lot of companies, particularly that sell physical products. So in the manufacturing, the wholesale space, retail space, you know, e-commerce and CPG brands, we've seen kind of a lot of adoption in the product from those types of people. And, you know, size-wise, everyone from in their first couple of years of getting started to we have customers using our product who have done or are doing $100 million in revenue. So we actually have quite a wide diversity of customers.
Wow. So I guess because a lot of the people I was kind of saying before the show, we got a pretty mixed audience. We have a lot of founders. And so founders that are building a business in Canada, most likely, many of the times, have to seek partnerships with either customers or suppliers that are more international than just Canada. And so there's a lot of value for them even starting up. But then a lot of other businesses that are Canadian businesses that do business abroad. But to your point, like someone that I'm just trying to think of something, like maybe like my local dentist.
Yeah.
Who maybe deals with consumers and their suppliers are probably Canadian suppliers, not a very long list. Maybe Loop doesn't make sense for someone like that. But for anyone that does import-export, probably very valuable. CPG, all of those other industries that you mentioned. Am I kind of
software companies, right? Like, but I mean, you'd be surprised by even dentists. There might be dentists who are buying molds from China or buying supplies from the U.S., right? So, you did get it. I'd say generally speaking, you typically will see it in people who are more in the physical product space. But I've seen a lot of service-based companies too. You know, like consulting firms or marketing agencies who are spending on ads in the U.S. And if you're spending on ads in the U.S., you have to use a credit card in US dollars, and that's expensive too. So there's a lot of different use cases across the board, you know, so that's why I don't like to overly generalize. But that being said, for sure, I think generally it is around people who, you know, have either revenue or expenses in different currencies.
I think it makes sense. I guess the question now, at least bouncing around in my head, is you've created a product that helps simplify what you're using to transact and send money in or out of your account. You've helped, I guess, structurally set this up. So you've got kind of a bunch of accounts. How, without sharing all the IP, but like physically, how does this work? Do I actually have a whole bunch of accounts and I see my balance go up all across all like a stock portfolio? And then I'm sure people are wondering, where does Loop make money, or how do you charge based on this being, you know, significantly lower priced than some of the other options out there and seemingly very high value.
Mechanically how it actually works is like we partner with financial institutions and financial services providers to make this happen. So like Loop itself is not a bank. You know, we are not a regulated financial institution in the sense of like we don't have a bank charter or a Schedule I banking license. But what we do is we partner with other people who do have those licenses and do have that infrastructure. And that's where the money is held. That's where the transactions take place. So when you become a Loop customer, you are able to more seamlessly transact, right? And the way we do that is through our facilitation on the back end with the different financial partners that we work with. That keeps your money safe because it's in protected, you know, regulated accounts. And it also keeps our cost structure low. So it means that like Loop itself does not have to invest a huge amount of money and resources in maintaining all of these different things on the back end because we have partners who take care of that stuff for us. So the great thing about all of that for our customers, going to the second part of your question, is our costs are substantially lower than if you were going to go to somebody who, for example, has thousands of physical branches and hundreds of thousands of employees, et cetera, that has a very high cost structure of operating. So basically, the way we're able to make our platform a lot cheaper and more accessible is because our cost structure is much lower than, you know, a big five bank, just for example, right? Now, specifically, how do we make money? So through those partners that we work with, in many cases, they have other ways of making money. For example, they earn interest on deposits. So if there's deposits being held with them, they'll make money there. When you use Loop for foreign exchange, our fees are much lower than a traditional bank, but there's still some money that to be made on foreign exchange transfers. When you use our credit card product, so when you spend on the card, there's money to be made off of that as well. So there's kind of transactional fees that we make there. So all in all, there's kind of different ways that banks make money, and effectively we share in some of the upside there from a revenue perspective. That's kind of how we monetize our customer base. But overall, we try to keep those costs as competitive as possible and make it significantly cheaper for somebody to use us versus using a traditional financial provider.
That's cool. So do I think about paying like per transaction, or is it like a monthly fee?
So you as a user never pay like per transaction. It's not like in a transaction you're paying X dollars. That stuff is actually on the back end, right? Like, so it's like the bank is collecting it. There's all these hidden ways that banks make money effectively. And, you know, just to give you an example, you know, when you use your credit card, you pay a merchant. That merchant is paying a percentage of that transaction. Some of that is coming back to Loop. Right? Like just in to give you one example of like how that money gets made, right? So you as the cardholder aren't directly paying anything. You're just paying for the goods that you're purchasing. But on the back end, there's different people who are benefiting from that transaction taking place, right? So
got it. So when I spend, it's like a credit card. Like I'm not paying anything extra. The person that I'm paying is getting a fee off the back. What about when someone pays
same
me?
Idea, right? Like, so, you know, there's different fees associated with that potentially. If it's a direct bank transfer, there's no fees. So there's no fees if it's like a bank transfer, but obviously if you like process it through a debit or a, you know, a card transaction, then yeah, there are some fees involved with that. And then we would get a percentage of that transaction as well.
That's cool. So I don't have to worry about some additional monthly fee. It's kind of baked into the product and utilization.
So we do have multiple fee tiers. Our entry level is free. So like you can use Loop's product and platform and all the stuff we've been speaking about, like making international payments, getting accounts in different countries, getting a card, all of that is totally free to use. We then do have more premium tiers to Loop's offering. And the benefits are like, we're very transparent about what the benefits are. Some of those fees that I mentioned that are in the back end that are kind of like hidden into the cost get cut down if you subscribe. So if you're on a paid tier, just to give you one example, let's say you convert money between Canadian dollars and US dollars very often. It would probably make sense to be on our paid plan because the FX rate that you would get, the foreign exchange rate, would be better on a paid plan than on an unpaid plan. So it's, you know, you don't have to do that. And what I would say is that even on our unpaid plans, it's about 80% cheaper than a traditional bank on the free version. So you're just like looking at cutting that cost down considerably more if you want to pay a monthly fee or subscription.
Got it. Makes sense. So you do have a free tier, but you can embark on paid tiers depending on how much business you're doing. So where are you at? You know, I'm kind of running through timelines. You talked a little bit about this starting, I guess, just before the pandemic. So we're what, 3, 4, 5 years into this at this point almost? And you're still ticking. So you've either crossed or just about to cross that, you know, there's the first year milestone and there's the 5 year milestone of businesses, at least the Canadian statistic of, you know, being successful and breaking through. How long has this been and sort of where are you at in the journey and how many customers or how have you sort of met?
Yeah, for sure. I mentioned kind of the pivot story. So the pivot was it happened during the pandemic, as I said. We operated for a few years before that. So we were in operation originally as Lending Loop for a few years. We relaunched as Loop in June 2022. So Loop's product as it in its current incarnation has been around for just over 2 years. So that's kind of the life of the current platform that our users have been part of. But we've been on the journey, obviously, longer than that. In terms of the traction of Loop's product, it's been growing phenomenally fast. And I think we've really identified a core need that many companies have so that we definitely feel like we've hit on like a key pain point that businesses face. Our kind of number of customers now is well over 1,000. So we're I think coming up on a couple thousand businesses using the product. And our growth has been awesome as well. So in 2023, we grew about 5x over 2022. So it was a really awesome year for us. We brought a lot of new customers in, built the product out a lot more as well. So, you know, I'd say like the evolution of the product, the stability of it really took a big leap forward last year. And I think kind of want to continue that momentum coming into 2024. We're pretty excited about what's to come and what's in store as a team.
Those are some impressive numbers. Talking about the team, how big has the team now grown to? You're supporting thousands of customers, I guess all Canadian technically based on where you fit today, but how has that been? What's the journey been like growing out the team? Especially during, like, you know, your pivots, the pandemic. What are, like, some of your
We probably need another podcast to go through all of that. Right now our team is just over 20 people that we have full time here. We're all in office, so we're a Toronto based company located downtown Toronto. I mean, like, just to maybe give you a short version of, like, you know, learnings and stuff. Number one thing I can say on that is always just continuously make sure that you have critical alignment between what you're trying to build and your vision as a company and your team, especially at this early stage. It's so difficult to build something. You know, as you said, the chances of success, the probability of success is very low. So you need to have a lot of things go right to be successful in your journey of building a business. And one of those things has to be a team that is equally passionate and motivated and bought in about solving for the problem that you have. And I can at least say, I'd say that's one of the things that I would check off for. Definitely we're not perfect, but that's one of the things that I would say we're very passionate and we all care deeply about solving the problems that our customers have.
Yeah, it's good wisdom. And so where you're at now, what's sort of the next 12 months look like? What are some interesting things that people should be on the lookout from? From you and your team?
One thing is international expansion. So, I mean, we're an international product. We help people build their businesses internationally. So why doesn't Loop do that too? Right. So that's probably, I would say that's a fair criticism you could level of us. And I want to by the end of this year, not have that be something that you could call us out for. I believe that what we're doing and what we're solving for is a problem that exists and is pervasive across businesses in all different countries around the world. And so we should be also trying to solve for this problem amongst companies in other parts of the world. So I'd say that's absolutely one big initiative. And then, you know, just continuing to build the product out, making it easier for companies to manage their money in one place. I'd say there's a lot of more integrations we can do, a lot more automation we can build into the platform, things to just streamline our customers' workflows. And, you know, just to give you some examples or some sneak peeks, like if we want to help companies save money, are there like key insights off of their data we can deliver to them? Are there ways we can say, you know, deliver value almost without being asked from companies saying like, hey, here are some things that you can do to improve your cash conversion cycle, cut your costs, grow faster, right? And so lots that we think about on those lines in terms of how we build the business and the products that we offer.
That's amazing. And I love that you've got sort of a business roadmap for international expansion, and then you've got your technical roadmap of continuing to evolve the product and its capabilities and value that you bring to your customers. On this sort of journey that you've gone through, what's sort of one of the pieces, either maybe it was from your parents even, what's sort of the most valuable piece of advice you've ever received that you know, really stuck with you and you've sort of...
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing you can do is just continue to talk to your customers and know your customers. And I think that's applicable to any business out there. I don't think there's a single business that this does not apply to. You know, talk to your customers, be in front of them, never get bogged down with like the day-to-day and technical stuff behind running a business, because it's so easy to get consumed with all the nitty-gritty stuff when you're building a company. So if there was one piece of advice I could ever share with somebody who wants to be an entrepreneur, who wants to build a business, is like, be obsessed with who your customer is, what problems you're solving for them, and continue to check in on that. Continue to validate whether or not you are actually doing that, because you might start somewhere and then go away from that and realize you've completely gone in the wrong direction. And it's important to course correct there, because that's something that if you don't course correct, you'll end up in very difficult territory. So just continuing to be talking to customers, maybe it's even every day, so that you know that your product and your business is going in the right direction. And I think that's for any business, any industry, small business, large business, I think that's always true.
How do you manage that feedback loop? No pun intended, but I think it's, you know, it's critical insight to make sure you're continuously talking to your customers, but it's the ways in which people do it vary significantly. Yeah. And with thousands of customers, I imagine you're not, you know, calling all 1,000 of them or 2,000 or 3,000 or whatever that is on a daily basis. So are there any tools or approaches that you've kind of used or evolved over time to stay
in tune? Yeah, maybe this is where I am a little bit contrarian on this point, but I actually think you should just literally be calling and talking to customers. I guess it's not practical or possible to speak to every single one of them. And I don't mean that. What I mean is as a founder or as an operator, you know your business probably better than anyone. You probably know who are the people that you are your best customers, or the people that you want to keep happy, or the people that you would want, you know, to double or triple them if you could kind of keep them as part of your business. And those are the ones that you should be speaking to regularly, right? And I literally mean like go for lunch with them, book a call with them, give them a demo, make them a beta user of whatever and get their feedback. Like there's lots of different ways practically to do it. And that can maybe vary depending on the business you're in. But yeah, I would say I'm very much against, you know, crazy tools to do data collection and literally just call and talk to them and understand what they're going through. Yeah.
Just roll your sleeves up. Good old fashioned roll your sleeves up. I love it, and which is totally fine. And there's enough tools for so many other areas, which maybe on that same topic, are there any tools or technologies or things that you and the team have found useful? Or maybe, you know, I'm sure there's multiple, but what's sort of the technology or tools you found most useful in your growth journey that you would recommend others to at least reflect
on? You know, I feel like everyone will answer with like an AI tool these days. So I'll maybe pass that one over to somebody else because I feel like that's almost like becoming the generic response. And I'll go back to something that maybe was before. We were just talking about customers. I think, you know, having a good CRM at an early stage is maybe underrated. Like knowing your customer, who they are, where they came from, you know, what's all their data and information. So when you're going to have that call, you can go and look up all the information about them, how they've been using the product, how they've been interacting with it, you know, where are they at in their journey. I think that data makes it a lot easier to do the whole customer part we were talking about before, kind of like understanding who your customer is, talking to them regularly. So I that might be a very boring answer, but I'm a basic guy. So.
No, you talked about customers and you tied it right back to being able to track those customers. Is there one specifically that you have either found most useful to grow with your journey or that now you're using because you feel it's the best for you that others should at least look at?
Yeah, I think it's very custom to every business. So like I probably wouldn't ever recommend like, oh, this is the best CRM tool. Like some businesses might even want to build one internally if like you have a very nuanced or specific product. Like we use Salesforce. It's a very scalable, robust platform. It's used by lots of companies. But like in itself, I think that and most CRMs like they aren't a solution in themselves. They're just kind of almost like a blank canvas for you to then build your business logic and processes into. So I think there's a lot of good ones out there. We use that one just because I'd say I'm familiar with it. And what's more important is that you spend some time integrating your key business information and data into that platform. That's where I would say is worth a time investment. So it doesn't matter what platform you use, but make sure that the data that you care about that's most relevant to you is being captured in there. So if you're able to use that tool, the information in there is relevant versus like being a name and a last name and an email address, then just like use Google Sheets or Excel or whatever, right? But if you can connect it to, you know, some of your important business data, that's when a tool like that actually becomes valuable for you, because then you can identify, you know, I briefly mentioned, oh, who are your best customers? Maybe you need to look through that tool to know who your best customers are, right? So if you need to do that, it's very valuable to have information like how much revenue am I making off these customers to identify who's your best customer, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, these are great like insights and positive components, but in every founder's journey, there's something that, you know, sticks with them as something they maybe didn't catch early enough or maybe somewhere they stumbled. And you know, on your journey, is there somewhere where like you stumbled or had a learning that now looking back for someone else in your shoes, or if you were to do it all again, something that you'd be eyes wide open to maybe a little sooner, a little earlier? You caught the pivot one, which a lot of people miss, but curious if there's any others that you think people should be
watching. I think maybe two things come to mind. The first is like, we spoke about it a bit before, but like knowing your unit economics, like knowing, being very, you know, intentional about who you're targeting, how you're going to make money off of them, what's like the long-term value of the customer. I think the way you make money is, you know, everything that dictates the success of a business. So I think having intentionality around how you're building your product, and if like, if you have a 5 or 10 year plan, great, but like make sure that you can reflect that in the numbers and how you're ultimately going to be a viable business, right? Like even a business like, you know, that is very aspirational still has to make money at the end of the day. So, you know, have a clear plan for how to make that. I'd say that's number one, which is like, you know, we get too many people get too excited about vision and all this other stuff and don't get focused enough on and disciplined enough on, you know, like basic stuff like EBITDA, right? And like, how do I actually make money? The second one I would say, which is more personal, I would say it's like less business, but it, you know, is important. It's just like authenticity as a person, as a founder. It's like, and when I started a business, I was relatively young for, you know, for the first time, I thought I had to kind of like be a CEO, you know, and like kind of almost like put something on to go to work so you could be a good leader. But I think the more authentic you are, the more you are yourself, and the more you kind of like represent why you're doing what you're doing, and you're honest with people about what you know and also when you don't know the answers to things, like the better relationships you'll build and the kind of better team and culture and environment you'll build in the company. So I think that's something that I've learned maybe as part of the journey of maturing personally. And that's, you know, something I would definitely advise other people who are just getting started to focus on.
It's great advice. I think also the unexpected outcome of being authentic as well is the energy can be diverted to other more useful and productive things than being someone you're not. It's easier to just be you every day and people are going to like it or hate it. Sure, you'll get feedback and you can evolve you, but being a fake you is a lot of hard work and energy. And so it doesn't really lead to the best outcomes when you've got so many other things to chip away at as a founder. Cato, thank you so much for everything we've talked about today. I'm sure lots of people by this point are super curious of how they can go either sign up or find out more about Loop. Can you let us know the best spot? And we'll include everything in the description, but where's the best spot to get started, whether it's learning or signing up? And in the year ahead or the months and weeks ahead, if there is someone listening, is there anything else that you and the Loop team might need help with or support with? And we'll make sure to include that as well. But if there's someone listening, maybe they want to sign up.
Yeah, if you want to learn more about our business, our products, our platform, we're at bankonloop.com. So like bank on and then loop.com. There's, you know, all the ways you can sign up, get in touch, or are easy to find on our site. Look, we have a very big goal and a very big broad ambition of building, you know, a global financial services platform. We want to expand internationally. We want to keep building out the products that we're offering. So we're always, you know, out there looking for people that can work with us, whether that means partner with us, join our team, etc., on our mission to build Loop. So definitely don't be shy. Connect with me on LinkedIn. You can probably find me there pretty easily. I'm sure my name will probably be in the podcast title. You know, building a community of business owners and entrepreneurs is only going to be good for everyone. So, and hopefully Loop can contribute to that. You know, we're a Canadian homegrown business based in Toronto. So if we can start to kind of do more stuff with more businesses that are Canadian, we'd love to do that. And that's why podcasts like this are awesome, to kind of spread the word and increase awareness and visibility of companies in Canada.
I love it. Well, we'll hopefully help you bridge some of those connections. Hopefully some of our listeners reach out. I definitely think a lot of them could benefit from using Loop as a customer of yours. So I'm hopeful that they'll reach out in that way. Cato, thank you so much. I think what you're doing is super interesting and super needed, especially as Canadian businesses look to expand and continue to grow their business internationally. I think that's a very important piece, and you're removing one of the blockers and making that a lot simpler. So best of luck to continued growth for you and the Loop team and your international expansions, growing out that roadmap. Thanks for taking the time with us today. And thank you to everyone that tuned in. Again, we talked to Loop, bankonloop.com. If you want to check them out, and we'll have everything in the show notes below. Have a good one.
You've been listening to the Pitch Please podcast. Pitch Please. Pitch Please. Hosted by Mike Thibodeau. Tune in for regular episodes and show notes at pitchplease.ca. And make sure to give us a follow on your favorite podcast platform.
Pitch Please, a Bloomex podcast, is hosted by Michael Thibodeau and does not constitute a recommendation for any organization, product, or service. For more Pitch Please content, subscribe where you get your podcasts and visit bloomex.io to join us on Discord.